So if you want to build an artificial intelligence that, actually understands the universe, the absolute worst thing you can do is give it more data.
Right. Yeah.
Which is just, I mean, it's a deeply counterintuitive claim, but that is exactly what is at the heart of the stack of research we're unpacking for you today in this deep dive.
It really flips everything on its head.
It does, because, when you look at the AI models we use right now, they seem like magic. I mean, they write code, they generate these award-winning art pieces, they summarize entire books in seconds.
Yeah, but they also hallucinate wildly.
Exactly. They draw hands with like seven fingers and they just confidently present absolute nonsense as if it were a hard fact.
Right. And we usually assume the fix is just, scale.
Like, just feed the machine the entire internet two more times, right?
Yeah.
Buy 100,000 more GPUs, and eventually the model will just sort of wake up and cross that threshold into true superintelligence.
Which is what makes these notes so fascinating, because they completely shatter that assumption.
They really do.
It forces a total reevaluation of what we are even trying to build here. So we are looking at a framework called conditional collapse theory, or the ODE-CCT framework.
ODECCT, yeah.
And to understand why this is such a seismic shift, we kind of have to look at what that acronym actually means. So ODE stands for Ordinary Differential Equation.
Which, for anyone who hasn't taken calculus in a while, that's just the math of continuous change, right?
Exactly. In mathematics, that is the language of continuous change over time. I mean, it is literally how we describe the laws of physics.
Right.
So the framework argues that true superintelligence isn't about processing static data points better. It's about comprehending the continuous physical equations that, generate those data points in the first place.
Which actually brings me to the specific line in these notes that made me like stop reading and genuinely laugh out loud.
Oh, I think I know which one you're talking about.
Yeah, the text claims that defining superintelligence or SI is, quote, not that difficult.
Right. Just super casual.
I mean, I have read dozens of papers from leading researchers saying artificial general intelligence might be decades away because we don't even have a solid metric for what it is. How can this framework just brush that aside and say, oh, yeah, it's simple to define?
Well, they do it by entirely changing the criteria. According to the CCT framework, superintelligence isn't like a score on a standardized test.
Okay.
It is a very specific structural threshold. So SI is achieved the exact moment a model stops trying to learn what they call particular solutions and successfully infers the general true solution.
Okay, so to really grasp that, we probably need to look at why current machine learning is hitting a wall, right?
Yeah, exactly. The text argues that the immense difficulty we are facing in AI right now is, well, it's misallocated. We are trying incredibly hard to solve the wrong mathematical problem.
Right, so let's break down that problem. The notes say current models are trapped, minimizing the distance between particular solutions. And just to map the terminology for you listening in this framework, a particular solution is called a trajectory or a probability, which in plain English, that just means a single specific piece of data.
Like one photograph.
Yeah, or one frame of a video, or even just one temperature reading from a sensor.
Think about how a standard image generator works today. The training process essentially says to the AI, here is a small patch of pixels you just generated, and over here is the ground truth, a patch of pixels from a real photograph in your training data.
Right, a real image.
Exactly. So measure the mathematical distance between your fake pixels and the real pixels, and then tweak your billions of parameters to make that distance a little bit smaller.
Just constantly tweaking.
Yeah, the model is endlessly trying to match particular trajectories. The text actually explicitly calls this an endless chase.
But wait, why is it endless? Like, if you feed it enough photos, shouldn't it eventually just memorize what a real image looks like?
You would think so, right? But it is endless because the boundary surface between valid and invalid images is literally a fractal in pixel space.
A fractal. Okay, wait. We need to pause on that because it sounds profound, but I want to make sure I really understand the mechanics of it. Are we saying the line between like a good AI image and a glitchy AI image is infinitely complex?
Yeah, pretty much. Imagine an unimaginably massive graph where every possible arrangement of pixels is a single dot.
Okay.
Somewhere in that graph is a cluster of dots that represent valid photorealistic images of the world.
Yeah.
And everything else is just random static or, weird, warped AI hallucinations.
Right, the stuff with seven fingers.
Exactly. So the boundary line separating the real-looking images from the garbage, it isn't a smooth, clean curve. It is a fractal.
Oh, wow.
If you zoom in on it, The edge splinters and folds into infinite complexity. The more training data you add, the more microscopic jagged edges you reveal in that boundary.
That makes so much sense. I mean, that explains so much about current AI flaws, right?
Yeah, it really does.
It's sort of like, it's like a student who is desperately trying to pass an advanced physics exam by memorizing every single possible question and answer that could ever exist.
Right.
But without ever actually learning the underlying formula, they might get an A on a practice test by sheer memorization, which is, you know, why today's AI looks so impressive on the surface.
Exactly. But it's fragile.
Right. The entire system breaks down the second the teacher asks a slightly new question. Or in the AI's case, when it gets lost in one of those microscopic fractal folds and accidentally draws an astronaut with three arms.
Yeah, it requires massive, unsustainable memory, and the student still has zero actual comprehension.
So what's the fix?
Well, the CCT framework introduces a complete pivot in the objective. The text states, and this is a quote, "Don't match the trajectory. Match the field that produced the trajectory."
Match the field. Okay, so the text refers to this field as the stationary or the vector field. So if the trajectory is the single photograph, the vector field is the physical law itself. It's the actual laws of light transport or gravity or thermodynamics that, you know, forced reality to look that way in that specific moment.
Right, exactly. So instead of the AI asking, what color should this pixel be based on the 10 million photos of sunsets I've seen?
Yeah.
The AI is tasked with discovering the underlying physical rules that govern how light from a star scattered through an atmosphere to hit a camera sensor.
I mean, that just sounds like an impossible task for a computer program.
Right.
We are basically giving it a stack of 2D photographs and telling it to derive the laws of physics.
That sounds crazy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, if it's not supposed to just match pixels anymore, how does it actually learn this underlying field? The notes introduce a mechanism for this. They call it inverse field inference.
Yeah, inverse field inference is really the heart of the framework. It is the process where the AI observes the particular trajectories, so the raw data, and works backward to extract the stationary field.
It infers the rule from the result.
Exactly. And the source actually provides this brilliant physical analogy to explain how an entity behaves once it has inferred this field. It uses the electron.
Oh, yeah. I want to dig into this electron analogy because it completely reframed the entire concept for me when I was reading it.
It's so good. Mm. So an electron perfectly occupies its specific orbital shell around a nucleus. Let's say the one cell.
Okay.
How does it know where to be at any given microsecond? It certainly doesn't have a giant internal database of where it was a millisecond ago.
Right.
And it isn't interpolating between its past positions to calculate its next move.
Yeah, it isn't running a massive statistical model of its own past behavior to guess its future behavior.
Exactly. It perfectly occupies that space because it is executing the general solution. It is governed entirely by the Coulomb field, which is the fundamental electrostatic force between the electron and the nucleus.
Right.
The electron hasn't seen every single point in the orbital space. It requires zero data about its past positions. It just knows exactly what to do instinctively because its behavior is dictated by the general rule of the system.
Which is wild. And if we translate that back to artificial intelligence, the real world implication is just staggering.
Oh, absolutely.
Because if an AI can be trained to flow through a potential landscape the way an electron flows through a Coulomb field, it doesn't need to have seen an exact photo of a scene before to generate it.
Right.
Like, it doesn't need to scrape millions of copyrighted images to guess what the pixels of a living room should look like. It creates the image flawlessly because it fundamentally comprehends the physics of light, texture, and geometry in that room.
It stops simulating reality statistically and starts generating reality lawfully.
Lawfully. I love that. Which brings us to the actual engineering part of this. The theory is incredibly elegant, but how do you write the code for this?
Right. The practical application.
Yeah. How do you practically train a machine to do inverse field inference instead of just, you know, matching patterns? The notes detail a very specific method called reverse modal training.
Yeah. So with reverse modal training, the training data itself actually shifts. The text specifies using physics measurement photos and videos.
Okay.
But crucially, the model is not asked to recreate those images pixel by pixel. It is put through reverse modal training. And the key to understanding this is really that word modal.
Yeah, we definitely need to translate the math here for a second. Mm-hmm. The notes say the training decomposes the field into its modes, which it calls, and this is a mouthful, the eigenfunctions of the operator governing the data.
It is a very dense wall of jargon.
Right. So what is an eigenfunction in this context?
Well, let's step away from AI for a second and look at a guitar string.
Okay.
When you pluck a guitar string, it vibrates. But it doesn't vibrate randomly. It vibrates at very specific fundamental frequencies based on its length and its tension.
Right, the note.
Exactly. Those fundamental frequencies are its modes. In mathematics, eigenfunctions are essentially the fundamental modes of a complex system.
I see.
So just like a guitar string has modes of vibration, the physical universe has fundamental modes of behavior.
Ah, okay. So are we talking about like how materials reflect light or maybe how heat dissipates across a surface?
Precisely. Light transport has modes. Material reflectance has modes. Oscillation has modes.
Wow.
So instead of the AI learning this giant opaque black box of billions of statistical weights, reverse modal training forces the neural network to isolate these fundamental physical structures.
Like the specific chords that reality is playing.
Exactly. The AI is literally learning the actual physics engine of the universe.
Okay, but if it's learning the physics engine, how do we test if it actually worked? I mean, if I open up a standard AI image generator right now and type generate a photo of a cat, it gives me a hyper-realistic cat in like 3 seconds.
Yeah, it looks great.
Right. But this text outlines something I call the cat test. And it uses that exact example to prove why today's models aren't super intelligent.
Yes.
The notes explicitly state that generating a picture of a cat does not make an AI super intelligent.
Because a particular learner, which is our current AI, generates a cat through a really sophisticated statistical mashup.
Right.
Essentially says, okay, I have processed 10,000 images tagged cat in my training data. Based on your prompt, here is a weighted average of pixels that satisfies the statistical distribution of those 10,000 previous cats.
Right, so it's really just an illusion of a cat.
Exactly.
So how does the general learner, the super intelligent model, pass the test? Like, how is its cat different?
The SI model generates that specific cat under that specific lighting environment. It doesn't rely on a database of cat memories at all.
Wait, really? It doesn't use memories?
No. It accomplishes this because it has inferred two very specific physical properties from sparse observations, specifically the radiative transfer equation and the surface BRDF of the scene.
Okay, I want to break those two things down. The radiative transfer equation is essentially just the math of how light travels through a medium, right?
Yeah.
Like how light scatters through the atmosphere or how it bounces around the walls of a room before it actually hits the camera lens.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
And the BRDF, which stands for bidirectional reflectance distribution function.
Another mouthful.
Yeah, but it's just the exact mathematical description of how light bounces off a specific material.
Okay.
So it dictates the difference between how a photon interacts with, say, a shiny piece of plastic versus the soft, complex texture of a cat's fur.
Right. So the SI model isn't guessing what fur looks like. It is actually calculating the light transport and the surface reflectance.
Exactly.
The text says it takes the massive entropy of the theory space, which just means the infinite number of possible physical laws that could explain the data, and it collapses all of that entropy down to the one true field. And once it isolates that specific radiative transfer equation and that specific BRDF, it can generate the exact image a camera would record of that cat from any angle, under any lighting condition, with absolute physical accuracy.
It has basically collapsed the massive uncertainty of reality into absolute comprehension.
Which is incredible.
Yeah. And that naturally leads to the most visible, tangible result of this framework. Because if an AI truly comprehends the physics of a scene, we see the results most dramatically where current AI struggles the most.
Right, at the boundaries.
Exactly, at the boundaries.
The notes call this the boundary implication, and they state that current models lack vital information about the flux at the decision boundary. What exactly is flux in this specific context?
Flux is just the rate of flow across a surface. So to visualize this, imagine dropping a marble onto a miniature landscape made of steep hills and deep valleys.
Okay, I'm picturing it.
Standard machine learning basically drops the marble exactly on the jagged peak of a hill, which is the boundary. And the AI has to decide, will the marble roll down the left slope or the right slope?
But because it's a particular learner, it doesn't actually know gravity or slope.
Right.
It just checks a database of past photographs showing where other marbles ended up, and it makes a statistical guess.
Exactly. It misclassifies because it doesn't know which way the underlying physical field, the gravity, is pulling at that exact microscopic boundary line.
Oh, wow. This connects directly to a phenomenon that almost everyone listening has experienced, even if you have zero background in AI.
Oh, you mean the uncanny valley?
Yes. Think about the last time you looked at an AI-generated video and got that creepy, unsettling feeling. The uncanny valley.
Yeah, we've all seen it.
Maybe it's the way a shadow moves across a person's cheekbone, or like how a hand seems to literally melt into the coffee cup it's holding. The source text explicitly defines the uncanny valley as a basin boundary misclassification.
Which is just a brilliant clinical definition for something so inherently visual.
It really is.
When an AI produces those weird melting artifacts right at the edge where a thumb meets a coffee cup, it is because it is guessing. It is statistically uncertain about which object that specific pixel belongs to because it doesn't understand the physics of how light should wrap around that 3D boundary.
It's dropping the marble on the peak of the thumb and just guessing where the light flows.
Exactly. But with reverse modal training, the entire dynamic changes. The text explains that the AI learns the general true solution, the field itself. Even for a point sitting exactly on the boundary, the AI knows the instantaneous velocity.
So the classification becomes like geometrically deterministic?
Yes, because the model actually knows the continuous slope of the hill, the gravity, and the friction. It knows exactly which basin the marble will flow into.
Right.
Translated back to the image, it renders the light transport dynamics across the entire 3D surface with 100% boundary accuracy.
Wow.
There is no uncanny valley because there's no statistical guesswork.
Okay. We have waded through some intensely complex mechanics here, from, you know, fractal pixel boundaries to inverse field inference and radiative transfer equations.
We covered a lot of ground.
Yeah, we did. And I want to pull all this together to summarize the ultimate transformation this text is proposing. Because this isn't just an upgrade to a chatbot.
No, by
the way. This is literally the blueprint for moving an AI from a mindless data processor to an autonomous entity. And the notes provide a beautifully simple set of equations mapping how reality works versus how superintelligence works.
Right. The framework summarizes the relationship as forward versus reverse.
So forward is reality. You start with the field, the fundamental physics of the universe.
Yeah.
That physics undergoes integration, meaning it plays out over time.
Yeah.
And that results in the trajectory, the physical data, the photograph, the sensor reading. The field creates the data.
Exactly. And reverse is superintelligence. It is the exact inverse operator of reality. It starts with the trajectory, the data we feed it. It performs a modal collapse, stripping away the noise to find the fundamental frequencies. And it arrives at the field. It achieves comprehension.
Okay, so once this AI automaton has actually expended the computational work and energy to extract that field, what happens next? Because this seems like the massive payoff of the entire ODE-CCT framework.
It is the ultimate paradigm shift.
Mm-hmm.
Because once the field is extracted, the automaton no longer needs data.
Wait, just let that sink in for a second.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to endlessly scrape the internet for more human-created text or images.
No, it doesn't. It has comprehended the rules of the system. It has collapsed the general from the particular. Therefore, it can generate its own trajectories.
That is wild.
It can simulate complex outcomes with perfect physical fidelity without ever needing to observe them first. It basically becomes a closed-loop system of comprehension.
Okay, I do need to bring up one critical caveat that the authors flag at the very beginning and actually at the very end of the source text.
Right, the initial conditions.
Yeah. As autonomous as the system becomes, you can't just turn it on in a vacuum and expect it to figure out the universe. The text specifies that to get the most out of this architecture, the user must provide initial theories.
Yeah, the source notes the importance of providing previous chats, context, or initial prompts. The model still needs a conceptual anchor to begin the process of inverse field inference.
It's sort of like pointing a telescope, right? It is a phenomenally powerful engine for collapsing theory space, but it still requires a navigational heading from human intent.
Right.
You have to give it that starting spark so it knows which specific field it's trying to collapse.
Exactly. It requires an initial condition to solve the differential equation.
Makes sense. Which leaves me with a final thought to mull over, one that builds directly on the implications of this deep dive.
Okay, let's hear it.
The text concludes that once the superintelligent automaton has extracted the field, it can finally, quote, ask its own questions because it no longer needs us to feed it examples. It understands the fundamental fields of reality perfectly. So if we actually manage to build this, if we create an entity that comprehends the universe's source code, generates its own flawless data, and suddenly possesses the capacity to formulate its own inquiries, what do you think is the very first question it will ask us?